And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe De Leon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I am doing great, Blake. I'm excited to talk Mississippi State today. I don't think you were as excited as me when I pitched it to you this morning.
My excitement level was in reference to, like, I don't know how hype they are. Like, I don't know how excited they necessarily are for the season. Now, there is something that I massively agree with you on. Mm-hmm. I think that their quarterback situation is one that's been slept on. I do think that Kamario Taylor, for what it's worth, I went back today when you texted that and watched the first start that he had versus Ole Miss, and I got to be honest with you. I think it was the best quarterback performance that they saw from the last game that Lane coached to their final game that they played versus Miami. I think he was better against Ole Miss than Carson Beck, Gunnar Stockton. I think he definitely was in the pocket a lot better and threw a lot better from the pocket than those guys did. So I think Mississippi State is intriguing, but you got five new offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You got some different weapons at wide receiver, and defensively, you were the worst tackling defense in the SEC a season ago. So as much as I could fanboy on Kamario Taylor, which I think that's really what you and I are going to do here, is probably say things in the offseason that we regret. Maybe not. But even if we did, it's the team around him that kind of worries me.
I do think that there are some additional pieces, though, on the Mississippi State team that are intriguing. And the reason why I wanted to do this, like, I don't know if we'll get to every single SEC school. We are. Somebody asked South Carolina preview when we're doing that. We're probably actually going to do that tomorrow. That was what I was going to suggest to you. Like, I don't know if we'll do a Vandy preview because I just don't know. They've got a lot more questions to me because of everything that they had that's now gone. That moved on to the draft and whatnot. There's a lot of roster turnover there. But I do think a lot of people are, if there's the one team that is the true sleeper in the SEC that like could legitimately surprise people, it does feel like Mississippi State. And I'm going to have a comparison for Kamario Taylor that I'm going to save. A lot of my hype does go into this because of Kamario Taylor. And there is a certain player that, you know, a couple years ago, a lot of people were hyping up in the offseason. The people that knew were hyping the kid up in the offseason. And he ended up carrying a team that didn't have a very good roster around him. And I'm not going to – you probably can guess who I'm alluding to here. You can probably guess who I'm
– Are they the same size?
They're about the same size. They both have a reddish color to their uniforms. Do you get what I'm saying? Do you want me to just say who I'm referring to?
What conference?
In the SEC? 2 years ago. Do you want me to tell you who I'm referring to? Or should I save it?
Hold on. Let me think. Because you're not talking about Carson Beck.
They're very similar physical profiles. Very similar. They couldn't be any more similar. Not, he ain't Carson Beck. A team that wasn't that good that he said player made extremely competitive to the point where they almost got into the college football playoff. And then they collapse this. Okay, it's Lenore Sellers. I'm referring to...
Oh, God.
I think that there's a lot of similarities that you can draw. I will explain why when we get to that segment.
Hot take. He's a better thrower right now than Lenore Sellers is.
Oh. No, not right now. We're talking about a guy who threw 48% against Mississippi State. Not right now. I think he has the tools
to be... He's not 48%.
He had a 48% completion. 48% against Ole Miss.
Yeah, but that's different. You got to go back and watch the game. You have to watch the game. I mean,
I watched with Wake Forest.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot better. I mean, the interception he had wasn't even his fault. Regardless, we're going to get to Kamario Taylor, Mississippi State when we do get there. So it's going to be a lot of fun here. But we got to start off with a little bit of I guess our announcements here, but do us a favor and hit the like and share to all those groups. If you are on Twitter, share them to Facebook. We can't go live on Facebook right now. Joe, I got us banned for until July the 4th or June the 4th, whatever it is, because I'm a naughty little boy, Regardless of that, share it on Facebook. Help us out there. Subscribe down below. If you're on YouTube, we greatly appreciate that. And wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're watching us on Twitter, do us a favor and hit that retweet button on 24/7 Sports. Joe, tonight we're going to talk about Texas A&M recruiting. We'll get into the little real hot streak that they're on. Mark Matthews commits right here on 24/7, so we'll talk about that. The bipartisan Senate bill should be coming through this week. We'll talk about that as well. Mississippi State deep dive as we go on through the show here. Dude was tweaking out during his announcement. I wasn't tweaking.
No. He's talking about Mark Matthews. I didn't see the announcement, but when I was talking to some people about it today,
he completely tweaked out. Okay. Yeah, we'll completely leave it there. But yeah, we do got to talk about our good friends over at 24/7 Sports. Look, a lot of big-time recruits are making the move. Mark Matthews, who we'll talk about tonight, committed on the 24/7 Sports YouTube page. But you could have gotten all that intel from Tom Loy and the gang earlier in the week. You're going to need to go over to your favorite team, subscribe there. You can use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. You'll get 60% off of your order when you do that. So go over your favorite team 24/7 as we cover everything. Joe and I will be in there during the football season covering your favorite team as well. So go over there and get that annual VIP membership for 24/7 Sports today. All right, Joe, let's start off here. So a big announcement came on Friday as Mark Matthews committed on 24/7 Sports. Another five-star for the Texas A&M Aggies. As 24/7 has been doing, Joe, there's a lot of guys that aren't ranked as five-stars at the current moment, but they do sit in the top 32.
Yep.
Texas A&M, after getting Mark Matthews, and even without Mark Matthews, has been a little bit on a recruiting heater here. They do have currently on 24/7 the number one overall recruiting class. I think the thing that's interesting about that, Joe, is they only have 14 recruits and commits. You have schools like Notre Dame that sit around 17, 18. You have Oklahoma, who's at number two, that sits at 21. So they have a long way to go, and they currently sit at number one on 24/7. With the addition of Mark Matthews and some of the things, Zyron Forstall, who left New Orleans and went to IMG, is also committed. Joe, they have five potential top 32 players that are on their commitment list right now. A&M is on a roll, and the truth of the matter is they're spending the money, and they're recruiting at a very high level coming off of a playoff run.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit, get into the specifics of this recruiting class, but they also have 10 kids that are in the top 100 right now on 24/7 Sports, which is just an absolutely insane accomplishment that is the way that they're moving right now. And I don't think that they're done. It seems like that they're in the running for a lot of top kids. What is impressive about them getting Mark Matthews is the fact that it seemed like it was a no-brainer that he was going to commit to Miami. This is a St. Thomas Aquinas kid. He's from Fort Lauderdale. There should have been, and I really thought when this announcement was scheduled, I was thinking, oh, he's going to be a Miami kid, and we would have been on here talking about Miami's recruiting class because that would have shot them up the leaderboards. But A&M has done a tremendous job of building up their offensive line with this recruiting class. Mm-hmm. Matthews specifically, though, absolutely lives up to the billing of being the third overall player nationally. He is incredibly, incredibly fluid moving, really easy moving kid. Flexibility, something that we talk about a lot with offensive linemen. And one thing that's really been funny, the tidbit with him, is that he won a limbo competition. So it goes to show how well he's able to move. But you know what the thing that I really loved about watching his highlights, Blake, was he's got a mean edge to him. A lot of clips of him driving dudes into the ground. There any opportunity that he had, and it wasn't any of those BS plays where sometimes you see kids torquing defenders where they're just, you know, ripping them and tossing them. He's straight up driving them into the dirt because he's playing through the whistle. This is adding to the physical mentality that Mike Elko has been trying to get at with his roster construction. This isn't a Jimbo Fisher recruiting class where let's just sign all the big name kids because it looks good in the press release. No, mm-hmm. We are going to go after the guys that fit our identity, and they're going to be able to really, really establish the line of scrimmage with a dude like Mark Matthews.
So a couple of things here. They're not done. They still sit in a really good place for guys like Josh Dobson, John Meredith, both five-star corners. If they get seven, of the top 32, there will be people out there that compare that to the Jimbo class, right? Like, Jimbo had a good year, then they did that. And look, this is, I am not trying to come down on, this is me praising them. They're spending the money. They're spending the money. So whether you want to hear it or not, whether you like it or not, they are spending the money. So they are positioning themselves to be that number one overall class. Mike Elko knows how he wants to build the team. Joe, they got two safeties, by the way, that are committed. And Kamari Dorsey, and they also have Jaquan Snell, both 6'3 safeties. This is the most, with all due respect, this is the most Big Ten thing that I've seen. This is the most Notre Dame thing that I've seen. And I'm not trying to compare Mike Elko to the Brian Kelly era sort of deal, but you know what? That big offensive line and Kyle Hamilton just find a way to stick out to me. 6'3 safeties. You're going to be good up front. You're getting number one overall offensive lineman and offensive tackles. This is going to sound weird because, yes, you can talk about Saban doing it. This feels like Mike Elko Big Ten. This feels like a Northeast, tough-nosed, in-your-face team. And that's how they want to build it. And they are. And you can do that in the SEC. That's how the SEC was built before it got so finesse. Mark Matthews, I think there are a couple of things here. When money's even, you want to go with Cantwell? You want to battle that? Do you want to play left tackle? Are you going to sit behind him? Oh, well, he's there. So if I'm going to play immediately, do I want to play right tackle? I mean, everybody's dumbfounded by Mark Matthews not going to Miami. And I've seen all of this. I'm like, why? You think the dude wants to probably play left tackle? He's probably going to play left tackle. And you're surprised that he doesn't want to sit behind Cantwell, who is going to be there for 2 years at minimum at left tackle, and he gets a year? Why would he do that? Now, A&M has Tyree Adams. And I don't know if Mark Matthews can't come in and play immediately. I don't know that. So if that is the case, then it's a great move for him. But to talk about A&M holistically speaking, Joe, they're not remotely close to being done. They're spending the money, and they're getting dudes, flat-out dudes. And, you know, that's the narrative that has always been around A&M. If they ever got right with the money that they could spend, what can they do? And I think you're starting to see it because they're starting to put it together. And good on Mike Elko and company for doing that. And they're getting players that are hard-nosed and fit what they want to do, and good on them. The only thing I'd say is defensive-minded coaches like to, you know, be stubborn sometimes. You still need playmaking ability at wide receiver. You still need playmaking ability at quarterback. And the question will always be, are you going to be able to get that in the future too?
Yeah, I think that the biggest bit here with the roster construction that gets me excited about the identity that's being established for Texas A&M is that they did undergo a little bit of a reset here along their offensive line.
They did.
They sent practically the entire offensive line to the NFL, which that is a huge positive recruiting pitch that you had all these dudes, you had some solid players that captivated or capitalized on, rather, the coaching and the development that Elko was able to have for his team, that they, many of which went on to get drafted pretty highly this past year. You're able to make that pitch in recruiting, but if you look at their current depth chart, they're projected to have four guys that are transfer portal players stepping in and starting in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going off of our lads there. They didn't have the depth to be prepared for the replacement that was going to happen here after sending all those guys to the NFL. But now what we're seeing with this recruiting class is not only is there a lot of foresight with the guys that they're going after, they're not just adding bodies to add bodies. There's a chance here that we're looking at the four top guys that they have in the top 100 that are offensive linemen, that those four guys are in the starting lineup in 2 years. I will say this, though. I really do think that Mark Matthews has what it takes to start as a true freshman. He is on the leaner side. He looks like he's a little bit closer to like 285, 290. But I think that there's a real strong chance that if he shows up and he bulks up and he's like hovering around 300, there's no reason why he can't play. I think you bring up the really good point here on, I don't think that there was really much of a clear answer here, nor will we ever get a clear answer here. I'm sure that that was part of his decision-making on, do I want to show up somewhere and not know when I'm going to get into the starting lineup? There is a clear path for Mark Matthews to play early on for A&M because of that reset. Jackson Cantwell is going to be playing left tackle for Miami for the next at least 3 years, probably 3 years before he gets drafted extremely highly. Now, Mark Matthews did play right tackle in high school, but the kid that was starting ahead of him, that was not ahead of him, at left tackle, I believe Shelley was his name. He's at Mississippi State. So he was a guy that also got an opportunity to go and play in the SEC. I'm sure that he would much rather be playing left tackle. I don't actually know for certain if he's going to be playing left tackle this year for St. Thomas Aquinas. I imagine that would be the case. But if you ask any kid who has an understanding of expectation for their future, they're going to prioritize getting that chance if you have the traits to play left tackle, because there is a little bit more money for you on the table if you're a premier left tackle compared to a right tackle.
Shout out to Tom Loy for not getting punched in the face during Mark Matthews' flash out, by the way. Tom Loy has cat-like reflexes. So we got to give Tom Loy a shout out for, you know, as Mark Matthews had lost his mind and started throwing stuff all over the place and ripped his shirt off and threw it into the crowd. But yes, I mean, look, A&M is doing something. Now, if you go down the top 15, top 20, by the way, Miami's still putting an elite class together. So that's not a shot at Miami. They got three of the top 15. They almost had four of the top 15. And with all due respect, just throwing this out there, it's either the SEC, which has majority of the top 15. You have Ohio State, who's got a kid from the South, by the way, the number one overall player. And then you have Texas Tech. Joe, I asked the question, I'm going to leave this theory to myself. But the top of the board is being dominated by Miami and the SEC at the current moment. The top end of the heap, and Notre Dame's got some kids in there as well. And Texas Tech. But it is interesting to see, as people have started to figure this out, this whole NIL portal situation, TV rev share, that if you look at the top 15, top 20, it is, again, dominated by the SEC. And Mark Matthew, A&M goes in the state of Florida and grabs him. I mean, it's an elite thing that you've just done. So, again, a big-time commitment from a big-time player. And I do think ultimately, Joe, when money's going to be the same, or like I've said, I mean, it was the least surprising thing about the whole Cantwell thing. Why would you want to play right tackle? Now, you could say Mwaga, right? Like, you could say, well, I mean, it didn't really matter. I mean, it doesn't really matter where you play. But
Maui Noah got bumped. He's going to get bumped. Yeah, he's going to get bumped inside a guard for the Giants. And there are obviously situations where
that's a whole different thing that we have to have a discussion on. Joe, if you've noticed, if there's been a lot of really athletic right tackles in college, a lot of them have been moved into guard or suggested that they need to move into guard.
I think that that's somewhat circumstantial. Like the Giants situation, he would have played right tackle if they didn't bring back Jermaine Illuminor. And I think that there's a hope that once Jermaine Illuminor is done with his career, he's in his early 30s, that they're going to bump Maui Noah out the right tackle. But the financial aspect of this, there are situations where, like, you got Penei Sewell, who was getting paid at the top of the tackles in the NFL, the top of the list of tackles in the NFL, and he was playing right tackle, but now he's moving back to left tackle. Yes. There is always going to be a premium on the best players on teams.
Wasn't it Decker that was in Detroit?
It was.
Right.
And they just parted ways with him. So now the smart thing to do, they were a team that maybe could be considered to draft like a Monroe Freeling in the past draft. But what they chose to do instead is to move Penei Sewell to left tackle and is start Blake Miller at right tackle. So there is always going to be a premium on that. If you really think you're that guy and you have that kind of confidence in who you are as a player, you want to go somewhere that you have the opportunity to start at left tackle. And it's not like he picked a nothing team. I mean, I would actually argue the success that Texas A&M has had early mirrors the progression that we saw from Miami, where Elko is starting to gradually improve and build up this program. And he's doing it year by year by really, really starting to win a lot of big recruiting battles for top names. I still think it's really impressive just overall to have grabbed a kid out of Florida when you already have your own pool of players in the state of Texas, to have walked into Florida and to have taken him out of Florida. Outside of the fact that they had Miami as their competition, why were none of these other top programs in the state of Florida, the ones that desperately could have used him, why were they not more in the mix?
Here's my only thing with A&M. I do think they take a step back this year. I don't think they're a playoff team.
Oh, I mean, I think that that's natural with the turnover that they have. But I think that we talked about in the preview, there's a real path for them to have. They're one of the highest floor but low ceiling teams.
Agreed.
For 2026. And what I mean by that is their ceiling is 9-3 and their floor is also 9-3. They feel like a 9-3 football team, kind of like, not the best example, but like Tennessee, who went to the playoff, a lot of roster turnover, took a slight step back, but they were still one of the top teams in the SEC.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, they lost to all the ranked teams that they played and beat the crap out of everybody else. Cause of course.
Right.
All right, let's move on here. Joe, there's another development. Cause of course there is. Brandon Marcello of CBS Sports is reporting that a bipartisan Senate bill is on the way. Republican Ted Cruz and Democrat Maria Cantwell, pun intended with talking about Cantwell, the left tackle or right tackle, whatever you want to talk about. But there is a bipartisan bill, as the SCORE Act looks like that it is not going to get the 60 votes that it needs to pass. So that there's going to be a new Senate bill that is going to replace the SCORE Act. And the focus, per Brandon Marcell, is that it's going to be NIL-based salary cap. First, I ask, what does that mean? An NIL-based salary cap. I would really like to get more of an understanding of what those four words mean. With that being said, Brandon Marcello reports that they're trying to put a better framework and a cap on NIL moving forward. And he also, in the last sentence of the first paragraph, says that it tends to codify the NCAA's rule into law and shielding the organization from antitrust challenges moving forward. Joe, what are your thoughts on a new, yet we haven't even had the SCORE Act be failed yet. What is your thoughts on a new Senate bill that is coming through Senator Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell?
Well, I think that as we discussed this last week, I believe was when we talked about it, I implore everybody to go rewatch the segment, because what was emphasized in Marcello's piece on CBS Sports was that a lot of the concepts that were put together by the presidential committee are going to be featured in this bill. So once we know what this is going to look like, we'll probably actually break down, now that these things are actually established and put together and actually framed into a plan. Mm-hmm. A number of the things that were brought up in that presidential committee plan that we kind of agreed with, some of which you and I disagreed on, had varying things that we did like. The G6 playoff, having the concept for that put together, having a cap on what money can be spent on coaches' contracts. I think that that's one of the biggest problems that happens in college athletics today. But I do believe, if there is truth, and I'm sure that the emphasis here, that there is going to be an exemption from antitrust litigation, that needs to be the biggest bet. I don't think that the NCAA needs to have sweeping control and that there needs to be ridiculous amounts of changes to the sport. I think there just needs to be established rules and the ability for people to stop suing the NCAA.
I agree.
It has become the stupidest thing that we talk about on this dang show. And when we come on here and it's, well, this player's suing because of X, Y, or Z random situation and they demand that they get extra eligibility. I'm tired of talking about it. That is the one thing. If there is anything that comes out of this, forget all the other stuff that we talked about. We didn't even talk about this in the segment, Blake. If there is a cap on eligibility and antitrust protection, that would be the biggest win possible for all of this. And I hope that that does come to fruition.
My worry is not the good things that they could pass. My worry is the bad things that they could pass. Because I've listened to Ron DeSantis, who's been appointed to President Trump's committee. I've listened to Ted Cruz. I listened to him at the roundtable. And none of them had a real idea what the heck they were talking about. They had no clue. They were making up things that don't, like, I'm like, this is the guy who thinks he can talk sports but doesn't really know at the bar. And he wants to talk to you about it, to make small talk and conversation, and you're just sitting there like, bro, you have no clue, do you?
Yes.
Like, you really have no clue. And so that's my worry. I agree with you. The NCAA having any legalities or full legalities to do things, I think can work in the sense of you can't sue if you go after a team for tampering. You have 5 years to play 5 years. I think there are some things that can give them what they need and the ammo they need. But here's where they're losing me. A salary cap, an NIL-based salary cap, it also tells me that you don't know what you're talking about. It legitimately do you understand what you're saying? Like, that's the part where I'm like, an NIL-based salary cap. How is that even plausible or possible? So
Wait. I think you might have, before we jump down that rabbit hole, I think there might have been a misquote here on this. So this says explicit prohibitions on NIL-based salary cap circumvention.
Yeah, so they're talking about collectives. They're talking about third parties. So anything with the House settlement case that just came back up, if you remember with the collectives, the House settlement case said no collectives can stay. So again, I'm asking, did you read? Do you have any idea that the College Sports Commission went back and had to go back to the House in the House settlement case, and they got their teeth kicked in when they said, no, it's a third party, and third parties are allowed to do it. So what's going to happen here is you're going to pass this, it's going to get sued, it's going to unravel, and we're back to where we started, because I don't have faith that they know what they're talking about. I don't have faith.
But the thing that I don't have an issue with a focus on preventing salary cap circumvention. So preventing, I don't think that there should be inducement based on NIL.
NIL is a circumventing to exceed the $20.5 million.
So, but that's referring to the situations. If an athlete has a big enough of a brand, they're going to get their money from revenue sharing. They have big enough of a brand, they'll have brand deals. This is to prevent from a booster who owns a dealership to just say, we're going to give him $1 million in a car if he signs with our school to come play for us. That is something across sports leagues that's not allowed. If I recall correctly, and I'm not going to speak too deep on it because I don't remember it enough off the top of my head, I believe the Las Vegas Aces, the WNBA team, got in trouble for this. They got in trouble for doing this.
But they have a CBA.
But that's part of the whole point with this is having antitrust protection to establish that the NCAA can't get sued if these rules are put in place. We're probably not getting a CBA anytime soon. This is the closest thing that we're going to get to.
But that's not what they're saying. I'm sorry, Joe, but that's not
what they're saying.
What they're saying is they want to put a cap on schools to say how much they can be involved or players can make in NIL.
No, because the framing of this is misworded. That you're focusing on the salary cap. To me, the way that I'm looking at this is the salary cap of the revenue sharing. They're talking about NIL circumvention of the revenue sharing cap.
Okay, then what are you circumventing?
The salary, the $20 million salary cap that was established.
Yeah.
That's already a thing.
They're trying. No, it's a fancy pantsy way of telling you that third parties, that they don't want a certain number to be exceeded. And they don't want that number to be exceeded through NIL to get players to where they ultimately want to go. Again, we're going back to square one. You mark my words. We're going okay. You're going.
I don't think that we're going back to square one.
Everybody wants. This is what's happening. Everybody. It's not what's best for the sport, because if they sue it and win and the bill gets crushed, you're back to square one. You got to know what you're doing. You can't keep a cap on NIL when.
But it's not a cap on NIL. It's a cap on revenue sharing. It's not a cap on NIL.
Read the words again.
I just had it in front of me. Okay. The exact contents of the Campbell-Cruz bill remain unclear, but the memo suggests it will incorporate elements from the White House committee draft framework, including antitrust protections and explicit prohibitions on NIL-based salary cap circumvention. It does not say that they're establishing an NIL salary cap. It says that boosters cannot induce a player to come play for their school by utilizing a fake NIL deal in order to pay them.
Okay, well then start putting that level of stuff in there again. That's not what I think that they're necessarily saying, but I will concede to not go down that rabbit hole. I think they're going to pervert the system, because you have Trump sitting at the round table, and I quote, and saying it needs to go back to the way it was. And I think
that I don't agree with.
So it comes off to me as you going out there and saying, well, you wanted to go back to the way it was, and then you say you want to cap and circumvent things in NIL. It comes to a point where you're like, are you trying to pull the wool over my eyes? What do you mean a cap? Everybody that's going to fund a college team is going to be a booster. Joe, if you've given one red penny to Notre Dame, or if I've given a red penny to LSU, a booster is a booster is a booster. It talks about financial compensation. So you're going to have to determine and get in the weeds of what you mean. Now, I have a circumvention. You ready? No one party can spend over $500,000 in NIL. If you want to do it that way, but you can't limit what players can make outside of it.
But most of those deals that happen, you wouldn't theoretically limit Arch Manning from making X amount of dollars from his Vuori deal, his I don't know if he's got a shoe deal, his Warby Parker deal. He wouldn't be capped in any regard to any of that stuff, because that is all legitimate NIL. We are content creators. We have NIL. We have name, image, and likeness, that if somebody came along, it would be legitimate because no one's trying to induce us to do anything. But now, theoretically, if a company wanted to get our show on their network or whatever, and they wanted us to leave 24/7 sports, and they said to us, we're going to just so happen, this car dealership is going to hand you $1 million, and you just got to make one social media post, and then you got to come over here. What?
See ya.
I'm just saying that those circumstances are fake NIL deals. Those aren't real NIL deals.
But here's the problem that you're that I see with it. If I'm signing a deal and I don't keep the – I give a party money and I don't allow them to stay up to the deal, it's our deal. It's our deal. And what you're saying is that you want the government to intervene on a deal that they have no real legality to do. Basically, what you're saying is that the government can come in and tell them, hey, you don't meet our standard, and because you came to a third-party agreement, we're going to intervene on this situation. That
well, what it would be is the CSC, which is already doing, is evaluated of not being a legitimate activation of a player's NIL, which we already talked about with the Nebraska thing. If you're getting paid and you're not actually doing anything that's worth the money, and you have a booster that might have a Cody large Camp. Business in the area. Well, I don't know if anyone's promoting oil rigs in Texas. I don't know. I didn't see David Bailey on a social media post for. But look, I'm just saying that I don't think I think that's one of the what?
Get your oil lube from us.
I don't think it's a bad thing, Blake, to have a restriction on that.
I don't want to fight you on that. But when you get government invention involved, that's where I start having problems, that if the government is going to come into a third-party deal, it literally is overreach. It's governmental overreach. And so the whole thing blew up because there was governmental overreach. You didn't allow players to get paid money. Deals were being made. You came, you had overreach. You are limiting them to what they were doing. And all of a sudden, you got popped because Ed O'Bannon said, my name, image, and likeness is on a video game. And I fear because this can be passed and that bill can be sued and revisions can happen. So we have this situation that literally just happened. It's called the House settlement case. It's called the College Sports Commission that you just mentioned. If you're asking me what they need to come up with, is they got to give the NCAA power and the power to investigate. And if they can do that and stay out of third-party salary caps and let the NCAA investigate and keep the governmental outreach out of it, I'm fine. But when you're coming in and saying, as the government, we're going to limit you to X or Y or intercede in your behalf on this contract is where I have problems.
But I don't think that the government's going to get involved with those things. I don't think that that's what this is saying. The CSC is investigating those things.
You do realize when the Senate passes a bill, if you don't go through that Senate guidelines bill, then you can be placed under arrest for not adhering to the laws of the country. That's the part of this. When you pass a Senate bill and you break an antitrust law, you can get arrested.
Yeah, okay, wait. I think that you're jumping to some broad conclusions here.
No, it is the extreme of the matter. I will concede it's the very extreme of the matter. But once you go into a Senate bill, how do you uphold that law? Let me ask you.
The CSC would uphold it, and the way that they would then be able to uphold it is either that you just talked about how the NCAA would need the power to be able to investigate. The CSC is the investigation arm on NIL to determine if the deals are legitimate or not, or if they're trying to induce a player to come to a particular school. This antitrust protection and having this written to protect the NCAA to have the power to do so, that they would no longer get sued, so you wouldn't have a Tennessee situation where they're trying to induce a penalty on Nico and Tennessee, and then it gets sued into an oblivion that it gets completely shut down, and then everybody does whatever the hell that they want. You need this written into a law.
But that also goes into the part in time. If there's an NIL deal, what did they do? What was the Nico case? The Nico case was that a third party flew him from California to Tennessee to talk about the deal that he would sign when he was committing to Tennessee. And the court ruled that as what? that the NCAA, from a legal standpoint, does not have the legalities to do that. And what
we all know that it was biased.
Sure, but they can be biased, but is it wrong?
But if
my son was going legitimately to a school and somebody wanted to use his third-party name, image, and likeness, you're damn right I would like to have conversations about that before we sign. It's not that they had bias. It's that the right thing happened. And again, what you're saying here is that you want to give the NCAA, who has shown that they can screw everything up, the antitrust law. That they're going to come out swinging.
Okay, so then we might as well just not do anything, though. That's why I'm like frustrated at this conversation. You're basically kind of just saying like it's going to be a mess anyway, so we might as well just not do any. Like, what are we supposed to do? We have to do something in this regard.
There being some guardrails in place, five to play five, tampering, things like that. But you're going to have to come to a collective bargaining in reference to college athletics so that you can put guardrails in place.
But that's not going to happen because they're not going to make them employees. They're not going to make athletes employees.
The government doesn't overreach to the NFL. The government doesn't overreach to Major League Baseball or the NHL or National Basketball Association. You start getting governmental things involved. By the way, how much was Rob Gronkowski's Gillette deal? How much was it? You Googling it? Let me guess. Let me give a guess. I'm going to say $10 million.
I don't know if I can. I'm checking. I don't think I'm going to be able to find that. But
there's no governmental overreach. Because there can't be. And I think putting antitrust laws in this gives a power to a organization.
I think my problem with this is I think you're jumping to a conclusion that there is government, they're overstepping what they had. The government has to do something. The government is, once this goes through, they don't have involvement afterwards. The government has to protect, because the NCAA, there has to be antitrust laws, because there is no other collegiate entity that exists. They need to be able to be protected in order to operate, because there is there's no competition in the market at the current moment for how college athletics works. So the government has to step in, Blake.
Okay, well, hold on.
Provide them with protection. Can I say what I'm trying to say?
Please explain this part to me. Please tell me how the NCAA or how somebody's being hurt by NIL deals. So go back to the NIL based salary cap that they mentioned.
But it's not an NIL, but that's not what it says. It doesn't say NIL based salary cap. It says salary cap circumvention by the means of using NIL, which happened the entire offseason this year. $20 million was spent across the board for every single school, and then schools spent upwards of $20 to $30 million additional dollars on boosters paying fake NIL deals for kids because it's allowed at the current moment. You shouldn't be able to manipulate. You're right. There does need to be a CBA, but we're not going to get one because these schools do not want to make the players athletes. This is the next closest thing that we're going to get. There is balance in the NFL. There is balance in the NFL and in the NBA and in not so much in the MLB because there is no salary cap, but there are balance in those sports because there is a salary cap. There is a cap for how much money that players can make. You're establishing this for college athletics in order to simplify everything.
Explain this to me. What's going to happen when a player sues this and says house settlement?
But I'm not understanding if there's antitrust protection, how are they supposed to sue something that is protected?
You can sue a bill. You can say it's unconstitutional. The bill can be sued. You already have a federal judgment on it. It's called the house settlement. You had the College Sports Commission who got popped for saying collectives aren't able to do this. And they said, sorry. Yes, they are. You don't mean to tell me that Jeffrey Kessler's not licking his chops?
But wait,
but hold on. The other part that is with this and the Nebraska circumstance is an example. It does not mean that there can't be circumstances in which schools have NIL that is going towards players as long as there is a justified utilization of their name, image, and likeness.
Sure.
It's not saying that they can't make money outside of that cap.
I know.
It is just trying to prevent the manipulation of decision making, of making a decision on where a kid is going to decide to go. I disagree with this notion that if you put this in place, that it's a mistake, that it would be a bad choice for them to put that in here.
I think half of it would be really good. I think the other half would make it a disaster.
I guess we'll see if it gets put in there.
We'll move on to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Let's move on here. All right. So we continue on our path of doing deep dives of teams. Tonight we go down to the great state of Mississippi into Starkville, nevertheless, to talk about the Mississippi State Bulldogs and their chances of winning this upcoming season. Had a really horrible season the first year under Jeff Lebby. They go 5-7 this past season. Got a lot better. Joe, there was a bright spot in all this as a quarterback named Kamario Taylor came on the scene, had his first start versus Ole Miss, and really did a lot of really good things to end the season. When you look at Kamario Taylor and this Mississippi State led Bulldog team with Jeff Lebby as its head coach, what are your thoughts going into the season?
So as we said in the beginning of the show, Blake, Mississippi State, we're not going to come on here. We're not going to pitch that Mississippi State is a playoff team. We're not going to pitch that they're going to go on some crazy run, that they're going to win 10 games. It is an uphill battle for a program like Mississippi State being at the top of the conference in 2026. They don't have that same base as the top programs do. But Blake, there are a couple of pieces that I'm intrigued by on this team. I'm a big fan of Kelly Jones, who is likely going to be a first round pick in the 2027 NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
But my optimism for what Mississippi State can be this upcoming season is Kamario Taylor. I think that as Jeff Lebby has been rebuilding this program, he has needed the right quarterback to lead his team. And he's had to rely on transfer portal guys in the past. He's got his player. Kamario Taylor is a decorated former four-star recruit with very rare athletic traits. He reminds me a ton of Lenore Sellers, who I stupidly questioned and kind of joked about what he was capable of doing in his first season as the starter. And he lit the SEC on fire. He completely shocked everybody. It was a slow start. It took him a little bit to get going. But his first full year as a starter, we watched the North Sellers upset teams that he wasn't supposed to, beat teams that he wasn't supposed to, with an incredibly below average offensive line, inconsistent play from his passing attack, and a really good defense that was on the opposite side of the ball. But the reason why we saw Lenore Sellers play as well as he did was because he's a big, strong kid that was great at surviving in the pocket. He was awesome at escaping pressure. I see a lot of similarities with Kamario Taylor. Now, he's got to rein in his accuracy. The Wake Forest game is a really good example of kind of Lenore Sellers-ish, where early starts for him, ball's going all over the place. He is throwing the ball all over the place. But when he is in rhythm, this kid is unbelievably athletic, is capable of breaking any sack, turning it into a huge play, and he can throw the ball all over the field. I think that there is a legitimate argument to be had here, Blake, that if there is the one team, we've done all these previews, we've talked about like, hey, maybe this team has something, maybe that team has something. I feel the most vindicated saying that I think that if I'm establishing who is the true sleeper, who is the team that nobody could see coming, it does feel like Mississippi State, because this Kamario Taylor kid is really special.
He is very special. And you talked about what we stated in the star of the show. Am I very much intrigued by a guy who sat in the pocket against Ole Miss? Yes, people will look at the numbers and say the numbers are the numbers. But if you actually watch the game, there's an asterisk next to that. The way that he sat in the pocket, the way that he delivered downfield, and quite frankly, how he ran all over a playoff team, and I could make the argument, showed better flashes than quarterback than quarterbacks that Ole Miss, for what it's worth, played and saw in the playoff. At 6'4", 230 pounds, I think the sky is the limit for Kamario Taylor. I do think he's got a big arm. When on point and on time, can be deadly accurate. His athleticism inside of the pocket is something that I don't think is really refined by very mobile quarterbacks, but it's something that he has. I think when I look at Kamario Taylor and I see the runs he had versus Ole Miss and others, it's not a starter until the very last game of the regular season. He had 8 rushing touchdowns to show you what he can do. My question isn't really if I think that Jeff Lebby can start getting the most out of Kamario Taylor that has all of the athletic ability. But you talked about Lenore Sellers and the rise that he had as a first-time starter and what all happened there. He had an elite defense. And I know you said that we're not talking about Mississippi State as you know, like some team that can do anything or make the playoff. But Lenore Sellers got the ball a lot behind Emin Mori. And they had Kyle Kennard. They had Dylan Stewart. And they created a lot of havoc to get Lenore Sellers very short fields. And he ran the ball all over the place. When I look at what he has around him, I question that offensive line. I don't necessarily know what I'm getting in receiver. I mean, look, you added Johnson, the wide receiver from Missouri, who's got some production. Anthony Evans, who I think is really good, returns. He had about 900 yards and 4 touchdowns last year. You do have some pieces, but I do worry about that offensive line. Like, you went and got DJ Chester. DJ Chester got asked to leave LSU. So, does he start at guard or center? Well, he's not SEC ready, at least not what he showed the last 2 years. So if that's what he's having to overcome, then God bless his heart. I don't know what's going to happen there. I love Bothwell. I think he's a hard runner. I like some of their pieces. But, Joe, they were the worst tackling team in the SEC a year ago, and it's not close. There's not a team in the SEC that was worse on defense tackling, and for what it's worth, your secondary stunk. Now, I know you got some different pieces there. I know that there's a lot of things that you've done in your secondary. You went out in the portal and got a lot, but you couldn't tackle, and I know you had a lot of injuries. You couldn't tackle to save your life. And I don't think it was schematics. Schematically, you were there. That's like saying, hey, players are all around. We're in the right call, but they can't make the plays. And it's a dude issue. So as high as I may be on Kamario Taylor, I don't know how high I am on Mississippi State. And we'll get to their schedule in a minute. They own a 7-week stretch where it's absolutely brutal. So unless they're going to absolutely upset somebody that potentially sees himself that could make the playoff, this is an uphill battle. But listen, I want to end it with this before I kick it back over to you.
Yeah.
We've seen very electric quarterbacks take teams that aren't good at all and make them very special. I mean, we've seen it. It's not like it's implausible or impossible. By the way, name a receiver that Lenore Sellers had 2 years ago.
Xavier Leggett.
Okay. He didn't have Leggett. Leggett was the season before him. Mm-hmm. It was Spencer.
I think you're right. Yeah, you're right. I don't know why I thought that he was there. Mm-mm. No, but that was part of the narrative that was with Lenore Sellers, is that he had a good group. Like, they were productive, but it was Sellers. It was every single time everyone closed down on him. And he'd duck his shoulder, and he'd slip past, or he'd just barrel through somebody trying to tackle him. And just watching the Wake Forest game.
Well, Ole Miss. I mean, he broke 5 tackles in the backfield that Ole Miss game and ran for 20 yards. I mean, it's very similar, yeah.
And I think that the craziest part about this is if you look at his body type and compare it to Sellers in his first year as a starter, he looks thin. And Kamario Taylor is doing this stuff, similar stuff. He looks like maybe 215, 220 on film. I wonder if he's bulked up and how much weight he's going to have coming into the season. If he's even bigger and stronger, I think that makes him more dangerous. But we're putting a lot of projection onto a kid who's played a couple of games, who's started 2 games.
Oh, that is. You're right, but you see the flashes. Running away from a top 4 team. Like, let's give an example. running away from some of the dudes that were – look, Ole Miss defense was bad in their secondary for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. Their front seven wasn't that bad. Their front seven wasn't bad at all. I mean, it wasn't bad at all. It was – I mean, legitimately, their secondary was poo-poo. I mean, so you just get to a situation where if he continues to show you those – because, Joe, in extended games, he's going to show you more flashes, and you're going to be like, how did he do that? So it's not
right. –
I still think that they're a 5-7 level team, if I'm being blunt. Like that's where I put them. But it doesn't mean that he can't propel them and win games they're not supposed to. And I mean, we can get to the schedule, but he has the ability to be special. I just don't know what's around him to be able to help him.
I do think that the run game is going to be big for them. Last season, we saw a jump where they were 14th in the SEC. 2 years ago, and they jumped up to 9th in rushing yards. They were 15th in rushing touchdowns, jumped up to 6th. I got that from Gene's page on 24/7 Sports, the Mississippi State page that they have over there. They have seen an emphasis on running the ball, but they haven't had a quarterback that can lead the way as a runner. So I now think that Camario, being that lead player who's toting the rock as well, it's going to add another layer for them. They're going to need their offensive line to step up to the plate. But like we talk about Lenore Sellers, that offensive line was the worst in the SEC that year. I'm not even argue with that. I don't want anyone to argue with me on that, because I remember every single week I kept saying here, oh, this pass rush is going to get to Lenore Sellers. And then my dumb ass would come back on Sunday and be like, well, I guess I was wrong again because Lenore Sellers broke 15 tackles or whatever it might have been.
Right.
If he plays to that potential, like the flashes show, which is part of the evaluation process that, you know, I go through as someone who scouts players, and you've played so at the college level too, so you know how to watch film and you know how to spot guys that really pop. He's one of those dudes. You mentioned the defensive issues. Some people might forget that Zach Arnett's taking this defense back over.
The
last time he was just the DC, they were top 50 in defense.
And they're going to run 3-3-5. It's goofy to game plan against. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing in the run game too. I think the 3-3-5 or the 3-3 stack, for me, it's the hardest thing to run on. It's easily the hardest thing to run on in all of that's why Kirby runs it. Mm. If we just going to be, it's why Nick kind of got there, you know, in the 2010s to 2014, where they're running the 3-3 stack. It's the most difficult thing to run on because you're always, I mean, you're just stacking and it's hard to get to the second level. And Arnett is like when he had them right, I mean, people forget he had two backers that had well over 100 tackles 2-3 years ago. Like they were really good. But the thing with that is it's going to take him time and they can't tackle.
And maybe we get at least some like halfway towards when DeAnton Lynn, I was maybe thinking when DeAnton Lynn took over at USC and took over for Alex Grinch, we saw just some slight improvement. Does that slight improvement do enough for him? I'll read through their schedule though, as you've kind of alluded to a couple times.
Yep.
It's a pretty tough schedule. So the three categories that I'm going with for this, I got should be wins. I've got tough matchups, but I changed to probable losses because we've got a tough schedule like this. You got to kind of just be blunt. Versus ULM and versus Tennessee Tech were the should be wins. Tough matchups where they could possibly win, but they're going to be hard games. At Minnesota against another young, talented quarterback in Drake Lindsey. At South Carolina versus Missouri.
That ain't going to be easy.
No. It's possible, but I'm not putting it at a high percentage. Mm-hmm. Versus Missouri, versus Vandy, versus Auburn. Probable losses. I don't think they're beating Bama. They're not beating LSU on the road. They're not beating Oklahoma.
They're at Baton Rouge. Yeah. My bad.
They're not beating Texas on the road, and they're also not beating Ole Miss. Unless something crazy happens. You never know with the Egg Bowl. Some crazy stuff can happen. But
I mean, people forgot, you know, I started watching Georgia Ole Miss again, the second game. People forgot that they called a pass at the end of the first half, and it was inbounds, and he, instead of calling a timeout, Pete tried to just run his field goal on when a guy made one from 59, instead of just calling the timeout and kicking a field goal. So everybody wants to be like, well, Pete knows what he's doing. I mean, go watch the end of the first half. I mean, I know they won that game. Joe, here's my thing with them getting back to Mississippi State. From September 19th to, I'm just going to go ahead and say Halloween, because I'm not going to say Vandy or Auburn. I don't know if you can go into Columbia and win. I'm really high on Austin Simmons in Missouri. I don't think you beat Bama. I don't think you go into Baton Rouge can be interesting because you have 2 weeks to do it, maybe. And Levy knows a lot about Lane, and maybe they can make that game close. Maybe Oklahoma, Texas, and then Vandy. I don't know if they have a win.
It's an uphill battle.
It's a very much an uphill battle. I don't know if they have a win. Maybe Missouri. I mean, what's the status of Ahmad Hardy? I mean, is it his femur? Is he going to be back? Like all that stuff, I don't know. Joe, I don't know if they don't have seven losses by the time they hit November.
The way that I see them getting to, I think they've got a high enough floor that 5-7 is a good number to put there.
Okay, so let's read off the teams that they'd have to beat. UL Monroe, Tennessee Tech. Name the others.
I think that they can beat Auburn. I think that they can beat Vanderbilt. I think that there is a possibility to beat Missouri.
Or South Carolina.
Yeah, and look, they beat Arizona State a year ago. What's stopping them from beating Minnesota? I think Minnesota will be fine, but Minnesota's beatable. And South Carolina, though, we don't know what South Carolina is going to be. South Carolina is either going to be really freaking good 9-3 again, or they're going to just do the same crap they did last year.
That month stretch of Bama, LSU, Oklahoma, Texas is insane. That's insane. But y'all wanted them to go to 9 conference games.
Okay. Yeah, they could play Missouri State if they're so pleased.
Oh, God. All right. Let's get to the Super Chat here. Shaquan with a $2 Super Chat says, dude was tweaking out during his announcement talking about Mark Matthews. Have you seen it now?
I went and watched it when you were doing the read for the 24/7 Sports.
You got to give Tom Loy a lot of credit. My man flashed out.
Dude, it was... this is going to sound mean.
I want
when he put the hat on, it gave me big vibes of like the Yell Leaders and stuff. And I was like, this is a good fit.
It's a perfect fit. It's the most A&M thing ever. All right. We'll see y'all soon. Use the promo code RJ60 at checkout for any 24/7 Sports page. You get 60% off of your annual membership. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.